Yeah, tough spot just before lunch. But yeah, as Steve said, also we want to talk about cat bonds, maintaining the equilibrium in value for sponsors and investors. And we have a good representation here from both sides. So hopefully, so we can make some interesting comments, and then we can leave some kind of time at the end for questions. So I joined here with my four panelists here, Stephen Ruff from Schroders, chairman of ILS. Michael Bennett, who is the Global Head of Market Solutions and Structured Finance from the World Bank. Niclas Hilty, Chief Investment Officer from Euler. And then also Paul Vandermark, Chief Technology and Innovation Officer at Sagewood. Again, I think good representation here. Hopefully, we can kind of talk about investor perspective and the sponsor perspective. And obviously, also with Michael here from the World Bank, a little bit more from like non-private kind of type entities. I think maybe to start it off, and I think certainly 2025 obviously concluded as kind of a record year. And talking about what investors and sponsors kind of saw, I think really talking a little bit about the supply and demand. We have obviously seen $25 billion of issuance, setting a new record here. I think we can talk later on a little bit about what our future outlook is, but maybe just looking back in the rearview mirror from a, yeah, again, pure supply and demand perspective. I know, Stefan, if you want to maybe start a little bit from the, yeah, your impressions basically you had and how really supply and demand balanced each other out last year. And we can talk a little bit more about the management of that as well.
You want a short answer?
I mean, we can. I think we have 57 minutes, so I think we can.
All right. Because the short answer is, look at the spread levels and look at the issuance. There was record size, actually. And I think that tells you a lot about where the market stands and how the market evolved in 2025. I think we have had a record issuance, which is great. And when we say record issuance, I think there are a few things to look at. Number of transactions, record issuance, but also the size of transactions, actually. And I think it was a remarkable year because we saw huge sizes placed into the market. And some programs, they went up to $1.5 billion, actually, which I thought was phenomenal. So it's a proof of the market depth. At the same time, we've seen a record-fast spread tightening that I think has not been seen before either. So when we talk about supply-demand dynamics, I think we need to recognize the performance we've seen in 2024 and 2023, actually, have been fantastic and have attracted a lot of new money. Talking from an investor perspective, what we've seen is we've seen a lot of investor interest from what we call more traditional players as investors, and that are people who have been familiar with the asset class since a long time. But what we've also seen is a huge increase in demand from wealth platforms globally. So when you look at the development of the UCITS universe, and we may talk about this a little bit later, I think that was a very interesting development as well. The UCITS universe has grown dramatically, and that is, from our perspective, a lot driven by wealth platforms that have become very interested, actually. And there is a third category which has been in the market, in the ILS, and especially in the cat bond market, in and out for forever. These are hedge funds. And I think the hedge fund world has really picked up last year. Some people have come in with substantial capacity, so that has created a lot of demand, hence spread tightening. I stop here. It was a bit of a longer answer, actually.
That's helpful. So broad investor support, maybe to summarize it. I don't know, Niclas, maybe just adding on other comments from the investor side, from your side.
Yeah, I would say strong support. And let's say if you look at where capacity is coming from or where investors are allocating, and you mentioned, for example, UCITS in Europe, I think if you look at other parts of the world, and if you fast forward what could be the case in these regions, I mean, the potential still is very big, and be it on the hedge fund side as well. And I think last year, yeah, very strong pipeline. And on the other hand side, I think a growing and spreading appetite from investors for the asset class. And I think, from my perspective, I think the, let's say, the things which I would, or which I wish would develop alongside with the capacity is maybe also things like secondary market liquidity. I think I would say this is a bit in the rush of this growth of the market. I felt that this was lagging a little bit in the maturing and developing of the market. So I really hope that if and when we see a consolidation phase where maybe there is a bit more balance between issuance and capital coming in, that these are things which can catch up with the development, basically doubling the asset class within only a few years.
I agree. I think the transition from buy and hold to more for trading is certainly going to be interesting. Maybe Paul, from a sponsor type perspective, obviously again a bit busy year for Sage. but yeah, just again your experiences in 25, kind of again same kind of supply demand question. How do you feel capacity certainty and others have played out in last year?
Maybe it's helpful to rewind a couple of years to put it in context.
Yeah.
We issued our first cap bond in 2022. 2022, we were going to a world of record inflation, rapid reinsurance market hardening. And we find ourselves at the end of 2022 in an interesting situation where we had very strong underwriting results. As a business, as a specialist property cat underwriter, felt we had all the fundamentals in place. Had many of the other carriers in the market retreating. Our producers who serve our end customer, you know, people buying homes who need insurance, finding themselves challenged to have any options in some markets besides the state market of last resort, you know, Louisiana Citizens or the Fair Plan, or TWIO, as the case may be. And we find ourselves in a position we could write a lot more high quality business, entirely dependent on having sufficient reinsurance capacity. And the traditional reinsurance market, despite the strength of our partnerships with many reinsurers, said to us, we basically have no room to grow. We don't know about retro, et cetera. And we turned to the cat bond market, and we had done our first issuance in 2022. In 2023, we found very strong support among cat bond investors. And I wrote down a couple numbers to make sure I got them right. But the amount of vertical limit we purchased in the carrier that was the primary growth vehicle for a lot of our growth at that point in time, we purchased $400 million more capacity, vertical limit, in 2023. $360 million of that, 90%, was cat bonds. So for that treaty year, we were about, if I did the math right, 58% of our tower was cat bonds, so more than 50%. And that $400 million of total capacity supported growing that business from $300 million to $600 million in premium that year, which, to some earlier comments about the impact this industry has, that directly supported us in providing insurance to more than 100,000 homeowners throughout multiple coastal states and bringing them high quality coverage, driving the kind of mitigation programs we invest in. And so that's the direct link of the capacity being available in this market and all the support from many of you in the room, which we greatly appreciate, and how that played into us being able to grow in a hard market where our end customer and our producers had very few options. That was a pivotal year, and our view and intent has been for cat bonds to play a meaningful part in our overall risk management regime and our carrier programs. And so today, depending on the carrier, broadly, cat bonds represent between 30 and 50% of vertical limit for most of our carriers. And then coming to 2025, we did four issuances in 2025 for about $1.2 billion in notional. Today, we stand with about $2.1 billion in outstanding bonds. And I'd say for us, we saw the bond market lead the traditional market on adjusting rate to a softening market. So while cat bonds are an essential part of our reinsurance protections, just like traditional reinsurance is, 2025 was a year that we tilted a little harder into the cat bond market because of where the market was on price. And I'd say if you read Artemis and believe what you read, we're in 2026 and we might be active in 2026 already as well and experiencing strong support and availability of the cap on market as we come into this year.
Yeah. And it's interesting, and Michael, maybe you can comment a little bit on this. So I think, I mean, there certainly have been phases in the cap on market where obviously capacity wasn't plentiful, and I think end of 22 is probably one of those times. And I think, Michael, it would be interesting to hear from you, obviously going through often quite long planning cycles and convincing people to come to the market sometimes with substantial size. What certainly I kind of have seen in my experience is that there are times in the marketplace where capacity can't be guaranteed at a sensible price, and sometimes makes it difficult for sponsors to basically really place the risk they're looking for. Again, I don't think 25 was that year, and hopefully 26 is not that year, but that would be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, to be frank, we didn't place an issue in 2025, so maybe what I'm going to describe has been fixed over the last 12 months. Yeah. But in general, what we see is that the growth of the market doesn't seem to correlate that closely with capacity we find at the date we actually go to market. Because we see this kind of growth, and we don't see anything similar in terms of the capacity for the deals. For instance, we did a transaction in 2018 where we brought four countries to the market at the same time, getting earthquake coverage: Mexico, Chile, Colombia, and Peru. And that transaction, I think the total order book for the transaction was $1.4 billion. We closed $1.2 billion across the four series of bonds that we issued. Then 2023, Chile wanted to return to the market. That transaction had matured. Market, I think, had grown by 35-40% between 2018 and 2023. And when we brought Chile to the market, we were advised that the size they wanted, which they wanted 600, 700 million of coverage, wouldn't be possible in the cat bond market, so we actually split that transaction. We did some in cat bond form and some in reinsurance, unfunded reinsurance. So it seems, what I've observed, and again, we're not in the market every month, but what I've observed is it's very month to month. And it really depends on liquidity of the managers on the month that you hit the market. And that doesn't always seem to be predictable with much lead time. So as you say, Philip, we work on transactions sometimes for years, and the parameters of the transactions are sometimes agreed in Parliament. You know, how much can be spent might be a parliamentary decision for our sponsors, which are primarily sovereign governments. And that does cause us an issue when we then, you know, months and months later, taking the transaction to market with very little certainty about capacity. I mean, we can always get a deal done. We've never been shut out of the market due to capacity, but it definitely changes the results if the market is less liquid that month. Maybe if that's been solved in the last 12 months, that's fabulous news, but that's been our experience.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, certainly the pipeline management, obviously, I think we're certainly trying to be helpful in giving investors visibility in the upcoming pipeline, and I think a lot of our competitors are doing the same. So certainly I think having that dialogue with investors is important. I think maybe Stefan and then maybe Niklas, just from your perspective, obviously you're trying to manage investors, or you're also trying to manage kind of the demand and supply on your side, not to draw down too much capital, but to have sufficient capital for transactions. Yeah, it would be interesting to hear a little bit from your side on how you're managing that, and there are some of Michael's comments.
Michael's comment last night over dinner was he wished he could come to market right now. And I said, well, that would not be a bad idea. But how do we manage investor expectation? We have, in 2025, been very, very careful in accepting new money into our strategies. We have not allowed partially new investors to come in and limited the growth of some of our vehicles, actually. Another interesting observation, our what I would call acceptance ratio of bonds in our flagship vehicle, and I think it's known, it's a 4 billion vehicle, has gone down in the fourth quarter of 2025 from traditionally 85%+ to below 50%. So this gives you probably a feel for how we try and manage capacity when we feel the market does no longer provide risk commensurate spreads for risk that's transferred into the market, actually. So with that, I think we try to be a responsible player in the market. Do we see this across the wider market? No, not really.
Yeah, I mean, at the market, obviously, to your point, there's more investors participating, but yeah, Niklas, maybe from your perspective, any thoughts on the managing the inflows?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's I think it's always driven by things you cannot influence as well. We should not forget, we heard it earlier, it can be even very simple things like FX fluctuations. They are high. This can be things. The other thing is also simply the pipelines which are in the market, and I think today we have much better visibility, roughly an idea what might come. Also thanks to regular issuers where you know. They will come back to the market, or you even know roughly the quarter which comes, where the issuance comes. And I think this all helps to manage basically the liquidity, which can be driven by inflows, it can be driven by maturities. And I think this is really, I would say, the struggle sometimes, and it is. Oh, it can be very imperfect, almost random, I have to say, is how the market response is to a new issuance. And the only, my personal advice is only to come more frequently and basically spread the uncertainty in a little bit in a statistical way over time. I think this probably helps to get things done because sometimes it can't be explained. We had years where we almost had patterns. We still have certain patterns. People get overexcited and allocate, and then we see sometimes for the later bonds which are coming then that there is not that much capacity left. And of course, working for our investors, this is something you try to take advantage of, that you time that a little bit and save some money for these days. But yeah, I think it still is in the end a low liquidity market, and therefore I think really probably the only way to mitigate that is come more frequent to the market, and I think the statistical
communication, obviously, between the parties,
outcome should be good.
So overall, but Michael, I think slightly better picture.
I mean, sadly, we're not really in a position to be opportunistic. Yeah. That's what we were saying last night. I would love if I had risk to put in the market right now, but we may have risk to put in the market in 6 months that needs to go at that time, and that's where the cycles we might hit a good cycle, we might not, but it's just very not visible to me right now.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, that's not the first time we hear a comment like that. And to your point, I think there's obviously different organizations, or some have very short kind of decision windows and can react to this pretty quickly. I think there's others, and we hear this comment from some of our larger clients who kind of, it takes some internal convincing to actually go down the Cat 1 path. It's obviously a decent amount of work, and others, as Paul and others know. And if they then come to the market and can't find the necessary capacity, that's obviously something which leads sometimes to a little bit of frustration. But again, I think with the market being deeper, more investors being there, and more communication, it sounds like we're heading in the right direction there. Before we talk a little bit about, I want to talk about like a little bit, investor sentiment and price as well. But maybe before we get there, I think just maybe staying a little bit with two more minutes on 25. Being on the panel here last year at the same time, we obviously just had the wildfires, California experienced, impacting the market, which I think, again, on the Cat 1 market side, we haven't seen, luckily, that much impact. Later in the year, obviously, Hurricane Melissa and others had some impacts as well. And again, Michael, from your perspective of Jamaica, was kind of certainly a story maybe we can spend a minute or two on. But yeah, so I think one, Michael, maybe for hearing from you on Jamaica in particular, and then talking a little bit about maybe Stefan and Niklas from an investor perspective, how do investors think about these losses, expected, non-expected? But Michael, do you want to maybe start off with?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Jamaica experience generally in the cap on market is really interesting and illustrative of how a country can use the market properly. I mean, they did their first transaction with us, a three-year transaction, fully donor-funded, so it was donor governments, US, UK, and Germany, for the most part, funded the transaction for Jamaica. The 3 years passed, there was not a large hurricane event during those 3 years, so there was no payout and no triggering event. And yet they still saw the value. They placed their cat bond at the very most remote layer of risk, so they carefully have financial resources pre-placed for other layers of risk, disaster funds and contingent loan facilities. They came back to the market season 20 of 2024, hurricane season. They came back to market paying the premium themselves because they saw the value. And then we had Hurricane Beryl in 2024, which was a near miss. And there were, not Steve, of course, but there were journalists who wrote that this is a scam. You know, the World Bank said they'd done a cat bond for Jamaica. There was a hurricane. Why wasn't there a payout? And the Jamaican government was very clear coming and saying that this is not the kind of event we put the cap bond in place for. We have other layers of protection for those events. And then, of course, fast forward to 2025, Hurricane Melissa, that it was exactly the kind of event they put the cap bond in place for. That was a once-in-a-century type event in Jamaica, and the cap bond, fully redeemed. It was a full triggering event. So I think from our point of view, that's exactly the kind of use of the cap bond market that we think is appropriate and valuable for our clients.
Niklas, maybe
I definitely can say that's also reflected in the wider investor market. I think if investors see there is this type of event, and what that means for such a country, I think, quite frankly, no reaction at all, because everybody understands. I think with Beryl, we got a lot of questions, and it was a bit bifurcated. So there were two sides to it. There was this question around, is this a scam? And it should have paid out, but there was also the other side where investors said, this was like a near miss. Why should something like this pay out? So I think that's a bit the questions we got at the time. I think to a certain degree, it's a reflection on what basis risk is. It's like people do a lot of things all day long, and then when a journalist writes something or when something comes up, it's a bit this surprise moment, and then people start to reflect on things, and that is when questions are coming up, be it in one direction or the other right direction. And in the end, it was basically trying to understand what parametric triggers are, what basis risks are. I think same thing I would say was a bit the case for the wildfires in California. I think everybody could see this is a big thing. This is not just a normal wildfire. So I think there was a lot of understanding, and I would say as an industry, as an ILS industry, I would say we performed extremely well around this event. I think we heard it before. I think over the last couple of years, levels went up significantly. It's not only about the rate on line index, because there is the risk component missing. So from that perspective, I think people really saw the market has changed. It's very specific. Not all transactions are covering wildfire. And on the other hand side, they saw definitely the effect of higher deductibles. I think that was a bit different, I would say, on the reinsurance side. And I would say on the reinsurance side, probably reinsurers were happy that the rest of the year was relatively quiet.
So similar experience with you investors on those topics? Or?
I think I would add another layer to that, actually, because our investor base was quite inquisitive following the wildfires. And what we did then is we showcased, you had about 14 cat bonds in the space that had wildfire exposure, of which basically I think only a few made it in our portfolio. However, the scrutiny that we saw from the investor base we entertain was pretty high, and demonstrating that this risk has made its way into the cat bond market was one thing, but also the question, how do you deal with that risk and how is this risk priced? And I think we do start seeing the repercussions now, because we see specific risk transfer of wildfire into the market, which we did not have really before, right? I think this was implicitly in a number of structures, but it was not really identified, actually. Whereas today, when you see Fairplant risk transfer, for example, we have dedicated wildfire cat bonds. And I think it has also raised strong awareness on modeling of wildfire, and the wildfire models have come around big time, actually. So they do today probably match historical losses, whereas a year or two ago, they were by far not matching any historical losses.
So more experience, but more scrutiny. Then I think maybe kind of moving a little bit to the current environment and looking forward. I mean, I think, Stephen, you mentioned before the spread compression, obviously, you've seen in the 25-year, which certainly followed a pretty positive 23 and 24 years from the index in 25, I think, around the 11%. I think still producing a double-digit return, but obviously have reduced a lot. Again, Nicholas, maybe starting with you, just investor sentiment, like how do investors look at relative value? How kind of attractive is the cat bond market at this point? What's kind of the outlook? I think that would be good to start with.
I think it's interesting is we have, I think on the highest level of discussions, we have investors where we always have the option that we say basically, look, the market is going where it's going, and do you want to take money out? And there we have two strategies. There are investors who say, yes, definitely, we're happy. If you can't deploy it at a certain rate, then, you know, distribute it. We'll come back when it swings in the other direction. I think that's probably one group we have. Also other investors who say, yeah, that's interesting, but where should I put money in? And the thing is, many markets are either expensive or very tight. And I think on a relative basis, the analysis we did, we still think ILS is on a relative basis quite attractive. And I think that is what investors seem to think as well. The other thing is we invest a lot of time in not over-focusing on premium, because you have it in two ways. Is when premium goes up, it's all written in the press everywhere, premium goes up by X%. But quite often, actually, in our funds, the yield stays the same, because you can almost like decide, do you take the premium or do you de-risk and keep the premium at the stable level? And the same is true where we're going now, is that no, it's half the equation, is to educate investors and say, look, we think whatever it is, 10% or whatever premium reduction, can't change it, it's the market. But what is key is selection, and what is key is, for example, the attachment levels and what perils are covered. I mean, think about 5 years ago, wildfire, or 7, 8 years ago, wildfire. It was just cover amongst everything else. And I think there was probably 1 basis point premium in the market for wildfire risk. And I think now, with 2025, we see new opportunities coming up. I think it's for both sides. Is there is risk transfer, which is a good thing, because it's important also for the society. On the other hand side, I think if risk-adjusted pricing is good, I think it's good for investors. And the same thing is, I think, is true for Jamaica. Is like, if other countries see that this is actually paying out, I really hope that. I think in the end it's a question of risk-adjusted pricing, but I really hope that there is more and more risk transfer, and I think these years create also opportunities, I think, for the market to broaden, and then it's up to the investors to choose and what is the right level and so on.
Yeah. Stefan, so kind of...
Again, try to be short. I think Raffaele this morning, I'm not sure if he's still in the room, but he made a good point, actually. There's relative value in investing in cat bonds or ILS even more widely, actually, because you got a spread uptick against, say, double B bonds, and that is quite significant. And whether you take it more liquid in cat bonds or even then more illiquid in private ILS depends on your, let's say, portfolio construction. And I think that relative value has remained because largely bond markets have tightened tremendously across the board, actually. The opportunity itself at the moment, and I think Artemis has published the latest Lane study, and I think the latest Lane study is pretty clear. It states we are in a soft market, and I think it looks at the Swiss Re Cat Bond Index and does the analysis. We have interest rates come down a bit, plus risk spreads have come down, and the expectation for 2026 from that study says you should not expect a double-digit return on an index basis. And I think that gives you a good indication where we stand as we speak. I totally agree with Niklaus that is before portfolio construction and consideration, and I think it is possible to deviate from the Swiss Re Cat Bond Index. However, I think generally the market is certainly not expecting a double-digit return.
And so maybe just to kind of, I think Niklaus mentioned it first, investors, but from a relative value perspective, what's kind of the feedback you're getting from investors, Stefan, from your side? Obviously, compression is one, expecting single-digit returns is another, but I think, do you feel investors still kind of value that asset class, basically?
Yes. Or, look, as I said, I think in 25 we've seen a lot of new money coming in, and also we've seen a number of new investors. But it's also true that we have seen investors who have rebalanced. So, and that can have two reasons. The first reason is they've been longer-term investors, And they've enjoyed 3 years of phenomenal performance. Hence, their positions have grown really dramatically over the last 3 years. Hence, relatively speaking, that position has become much bigger than some of the related positions. So they do take money off the table because they need to rebalance the portfolio. You got the more opportunistic side where people say, look, I've just made tremendous amounts of money. I cash out my gains. I continue to be an investor, but I will come back bigger when the market turns harder. So these are the two motivations that we see, and we see that rebalancing as well as new money coming in.
Okay, well, helpful. Moving on maybe to a little kind of different topic, I think on obviously looking how the market can grow further. We have heard of new investors kind of coming in. I think maybe switching a little bit to the sponsor side again, or like and how sponsors are thinking about cat bonds and there's really, oh, there's obviously price and then there's structure. But I know Paul, from your side, would be quite interested to understand a little bit on, you obviously have cat bonds, you have kind of your traditional reinsurance. And when you look at it less through the pricing lens, but more from a kind of a product lens, just would be helpful to hear from you, like a little bit on how you're looking at it. What's kind of the benefit you think the cat bond market can bring to date, but also more importantly, what it might be able to bring in the future.
Sure. So, picking up on pricing and then moving on to coverage and the other dimensions of product, I think per my earlier comments, for us, pricing is a secondary consideration. Capacity is the principal one. So we want cat bonds to remain a core part of our reinsurance programs. We know that prices will move with market cycles. The 2023 example I mentioned, I think we set the top of the market with our issuance in early 2023. We'd prefer not to do that. That means higher end cost of product for our customer ultimately, but that was the cost of capacity at that point in time. And the most important thing was it was available and we could grow and provide protection to our end policyholders. And then as I mentioned, as the market softened, we've tilted one way or the other as we've seen where the markets are at. But that's more of an optimization within the bigger picture. And even coming into 2026, with the reinsurance market and the cat bond market not working perfectly in sync, we've seen the reinsurance market becoming much more competitive recently, and I'd say the markets seem to be in healthy balance today from our perspective. So the focus for us is more, is the capacity there that we need to execute on our business plans, and is it the type of capacity we need? And that's maybe the most important thing here, which is when we started issuing, we issued very simple transactions. They were higher in the tower, lower risk, simpler structures, name storm, single peril, the simplest thing to transact in the cat bond market. That served a purpose for us, but a limited purpose. Our carriers need multi-peril protection. They need protection at higher levels of risk, farther down the curve. And the cat bond market would be unable to play as meaningful a role if it didn't work with us and expand to meet those needs. And what we found over time is that the market's been very receptive to us evolving the breadth and complexity of the transactions we've done. And I think that's been a function, it was commented on this morning on the panel, that there's a need for trust built through transparency and track record. And we've invested a lot of time in educating many of the people in this room and other investors about what we do in our business, how we do it, building a track record. We've tried to lead the market on transparency in terms of the data we provide. We've tried to de-risk elements of the deals by limiting growth limitation factors and things like that. And we've found good response. So we've evolved over time to placing cat bonds that, again, depends what you read in the press, but let's say it's, based on what you read in the press, have evolved to include multi-peril coverage. In the past, we've placed second event coverage and so forth. And so for us, that's been essential. And we'd like to see more of that going forward. We've, outside of the scope of this panel directly, but speaking about ILS more broadly, we've also transferred higher risk, higher frequency risk, as well as non-cat attritional risk into sidecar vehicles, right? Sidecar vehicle. and found good response there and interest in being able to participate in that part of the risk spectrum. We'd love to be able to see that packaged up as a cap bond and syndicated and transacted the same way over time. So seeing the market move in that direction and support more of the whole spectrum of risk that we need our carriers to be able to transfer is where we'd hope to see the market evolving.
Yeah. Okay. And Michael, from your perspective, I mean, I think there's obviously more parametric type driven coverages, sometimes also in areas or countries which hasn't have had a cap on issued before. I mean, yeah, again, talking about the wish list you would have towards the cap on market.
Yeah, I mean, for us, we always say the same thing, which is more, well, certainly more openness to parametric, because that's the basic appropriate trigger type for our kinds of clients, which are governmental clients. They don't have a book of insurance that they're reinsuring. They're really reinsuring their overall fiscal position. And more flexibility around both risks, but also data sources, modeling firms would really help us in terms of expanding how many countries we can bring into this market. Now, I understand that when one large BlackRock ETF dominates this market and all the gray-haired asset managers in the room are put out to pasture, my dream of flexibility will be in danger, because that will be that's probably not consistent with that dream of the market. But to the extent the specialized managers still exist, we do really appreciate the ones that work with us, that are flexible, that are willing to consider new models, different modeling firms, and that's critical to what we're trying to do, which is, you know, take on protection gap issues globally, where it's not always modeled or data sources that we're familiar with.
Yeah, and maybe from the manager side, we can analyze those risks. I think, yeah, would be good to comment a little bit on structural indemnity, kind of also aggregate second events, others, and then also the parametric and new perils.
All of that at once?
Well, in a short answer. No, just I think how you best phase in essentially those demands from sponsors, which I think ultimately helps the market grow. But I think...
I think we follow a very, very good discussion, because at the end of the day, I think where Paul's coming from is a very data-driven, very well documented, and very well held portfolio that has information that allows modeling to be relatively precise. At least that's how we feel about it, actually. Whereas when you look at Michael's world, I think you look at a world where you have countries without much data, insurance penetration, where we have a completely different situation at the end of the day. Still, the cat bond market's been able to accept both sides of that spectrum, if you can call it that way, actually. If you ask us as an investor, we've always been trying to accommodate both, that being the more data-driven end of the spectrum that can come with rather complicated structures, because we do see in the cat bond market relatively complicated structures, aggregate, second event, and so on and so forth. But we also can look at parametric, as long as there is a what you would call historic data catalog that allows you to understand at risk, actually. So I wouldn't be, or we are not, let's put it that way, actually, exclusive either on one side or the other, actually. I can probably provide another comment later on how we feel about complicated structures and give you a bit of a hint how we model them, but let's probably have Niklaus, if he disagrees with what I just said, actually.
No, I think the beauty, and I think it goes back to the BlackRock versus a diverse market. I think every structure, I would say, different managers have different preferences, the way they look at it. Should be clear, these are models. You can have different views of where models are maybe weak, whether it's on the frequency or whatever side is. So it's an imperfect world, and I feel like different managers have different views on these things. And that's the beauty of it, is because it doesn't mean everybody needs to participate in a certain risk type. And we see, I think compared to maybe 10, 15 years ago, I believe we see more, for example, parametric specialized managers these days that didn't really exist at the time. And I think this is, whether one agrees or not, that doesn't matter, but it's an added value to the overall, I would say, market, and to the overall challenge as well, where in the end you have insurers, you have sponsors who have clients and have and need risk transfer for the reasons we heard, and I think then it's definitely good that there's a full spectrum of solutions, and I hope that that there will be further developments where things can be optimized and issues can be addressed, and I really hope that the industry is in this, let's say, probably or likely softening market phase, is also working on innovation, on improving these type of solutions. So I think that's a big added value to have, and I hope nobody agrees that this is, because think about if there would just be a couple of big players, in the end, for what we heard, if they don't have cash, the market would be closed for new issuances. And I think like this, you see, it's not perfect from a timing perspective sometimes, but you still see enough diversity that maybe somebody is growing in that area, somebody is shrinking, so that there is in the end the market clears the issuances over time.
Yeah, and we certainly see more investors coming in rather than less investors.
Well, another perspective I thought I'd add here is, if you think back to the very early days of this market, there was one thesis, which was the way the market would develop would be through almost all index transactions that would eliminate the need for investors to understand indemnity risk and its complexities, and through the expertization of deals on the basis of cat models that would give a number people could trust, and therefore you could have a deep pool of investors who could transact risk readily, high liquidity, without having to invest in the specialization of knowledge to underwrite individual sponsors and to understand the nuances of cat models. So where are we today? I think when we look at the market, the index product has not met the needs of most buyers. It's just, certainly we're in that class. We need indemnity coverage. That's how the market has developed. And with it, we've seen investors build and demonstrate a lot of sophistication in understanding and underwriting the idiosyncrasies of one issue or one sponsor versus another. And likewise, I think to some of the comments just made, on the modeling front, I spent the first 25 years of my career building cat models. The hardest thing to do as a modeler was to admit that the model was wrong. But the models are all wrong. They're the best tool you have. They improve over time. They're very informative, but they're not perfect. And so I think the maturation of the insurance and reinsurance industry over time around risk management and modeling in general has been the understanding of the need to form your own view of risk. And I think we've seen the same thing develop now in the ILS and cat bond world. Evelyn, I think, commented on it this morning, that the C managers who have their own view of risk, they're not all the same, in some comments just now. And for us, that's a very healthy and important thing. Not everyone needs to see risk the same way. The market will be much healthier when it's not pinned exactly to what the 2 decimal point EL is and that's printed in the deal. I think there's a bar that there needs to be a credible model in whatever territory or country or for whatever peril to give people some frame of reference and some confidence in transacting risk. But for the market really to be healthy, it needs the participants to have a view of risk on that. And I think one indicator of that we've seen in the traditional market, and I would hope we would see playing out in the cat bond market over time, is less sensitivity to model change. So in the past, years back, when the models changed, that was a disruptive thing for the markets because so many people took the model as gospel, worked to it, and then had to change everything. These days, we see investors similar to what we see with insurers and reinsurers who have more of a view on the model. When the models do change, they are adapting their view on the model as opposed to feeling it be disruptive. So I think with coming model changes, it's a good opportunity, and with even some of the recent ones, to see that play out.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I think on the also new investors coming to the space, they're exactly adopting a similar approach you mentioned, or they're hiring in-house expertise, trying to build them up to really kind of run them over with an underwriting approach than kind of a typical trading type approach. Conscious of time, I think just on this topic, a little bit on kind of market growth. We talked about price, we talked about product. Nicholas, maybe just on kind of other cornerstone standards of the market, or being like collateral or others. I mean, I think what are kind of the things which should not change, which are kind of fundamental in your mind from kind of underlying the marketplace? I don't know if you're sharing some of your thoughts there.
Yeah, I think the cat bond market has been successful over the last couple of years, and I would say found its place. Come back to that in a second. I think collateralized reinsurance as well, and reinsurance anyhow. These are core markets, and I would say important for, let's say, for the future to be able to react and to absorb probably a higher loss burden for whatever reason, different factors going into the future, and I think that is core. I think, however, there is still a massive potential out there. Think about like 20 plus years ago, most of the cap bonds had a rating to make investors comfortable. I think then we went through a time where investors were relying either on specialized ILS managers or let's say the models felt that the models are doing a good job, no need for additional cost. But I think if you look at some of the risk buckets which are out there, where I would say as a fund manager, I think if we go below 3-4%, it's getting difficult, because we have targets of and especially when 75% of the market which is exposed to US hurricanes, then there is a cost of capital to that for reinsurers as well, a cost of capital with their capital models. But I see also through structural changes we've seen to new investors which are coming to the market, I see a big potential there, for example, for these most senior tranches, that there could be a revamp of the rating agencies with a rating and investors directly starting to invest into. They have different capital costs, and I think this is really what I hope to a certain degree going into the next 10, 15 years, is that the market structurally also enables these type of solutions, because I think, again, investors are getting educated, investors are getting having a deep understanding for the risk, how it reacts, and I think that opens up also totally new buckets of capital, I would say.
Stefan, from your perspective?
Let's keep it short, actually. You know, I would, a few years ago, I would probably have said we need more standardization in this market, actually, to bring down the cost of a cat bond transaction, because the legal cost, the operational cost is still very, very high. I think in today's world, I would say AI will solve that for us going forward, because eventually I think AI might be able to bring down the cost in terms of drafting legal wordings. So probably it's going to be taken care of by itself. So that's the only other comment I'd make in addition, actually. So.
Perfect. Like I said, conscious of time, I think we want to leave a few minutes for questions. But maybe just kind of, again, looking forward, obviously, $25 billion in the capital market in 25. I think there are various predictions what 26 is going to turn out. Maybe just from each of you, kind of looking at 2030, 2035, just give us a little bit of what's kind of, and again, focusing on the cat bond new insurance volume, maybe as the number to guess. Paul, do you want to go first?
You are not going to draw me out on a crystal ball number on the whole market. We have an ambitious growth plan for our business. We'll buy probably $7 billion of first event vertical limit across all of our carrier partners this year, up from $5 billion prior year. We expect to continue growing and hope that our partners are successful at bringing in more investor funds and broadening the nature of risk they can support. And we continue, I think I said it before, but I need to say it at some point while on stage, we are hugely appreciative of the support from everyone in this room who backs what we do. And we hope to see the market continue to grow and be healthy and more diverse. And I'll let the rest of you prognosticate on numbers.
Nicholas.
Yeah, I still think there is a big opportunity out there to make that grow in different buckets. I would say just doing a simple chart analysis, we always had these cycles where we saw big growth and then a consolidation. So I'm steadily wrong on that one. I predicted that 2025 will be the year where we will see a bit more of a consolidation of the volume. But I believe I will not, or we won't see that in 2026, but at some point we will see that where, let's say, most of the cap bond issuers or most of the insurers, reinsurers who want to issue a cap bond have issued it, and also with price dynamic and everything. But again, is like I think there will be new buckets of risk transfer, which will help to grow the market overall.
So any estimates on numbers a week?
I would say we probably are going to be close to 22 billion this year.
Okay. Down in the future?
I would say 5 to 10% growth each year, in the future, in the average.
Okay. Yeah. Michael?
I really don't know. There was a time when I looked at maybe 10 years ago, three markets which I engage in: green bonds, cat bonds, and Sharia compliant bonds or Sukuk. And they were all relatively similar sized markets. And they were all had projections of massive growth. And they since then have grown at fabulously different levels such that they're no longer all similar sized markets. So that just leads me to say, I have no idea.
I guess it's all down to you now to come up with a number.
It's down to me, right, to provide a number. No, I turn it around, actually. As an industry, as a partnership between sponsors and investors, I think we should be ambitious. And I think if we were able to hit the 100 billion mark by the latest 2030, I think I'd be very, very glad, actually. So some people know I've been almost 30 years now in the industry. However, I think we should keep that ambition and bring ourselves, because it's been a great partnership between sponsors and investors. And the cat bond market, I think, is a fantastic example how you have the insurance cycle combined with capital markets, and one draws the other, and it's not always obvious which one draws which one, but I think the ambition should be there.
No, fully agree. Perfect. I think with that we're right on time. I don't know, Steve, do you want to open up for questions, or I don't know if anybody has a microphone. I think it's on the way.
My question's for you. At the beginning of the conversation, we were talking about cat bonds and the LA wildfires, and you used the term normal wildfire risk. And I was just curious, like, what does that phrase mean to you?
I mean, we definitely have observed wildfires over the last 20 years, and I think the question is always when you have like the average wildfire size per year, I think this is one thing, and then you see from time to time you see these events where I think what we do a lot is we think about what is like, what is a bad outcome, what is a worst case, what is like, and it's obvious it was, before it happened for us, it was like a major US city getting impacted by a wildfire. That is very different from if you have, let's say, a couple of villages or so affected. And I think this is really where you see it and then you realize this is probably somewhere in the tail, in the extraordinary, more extreme event. And I think this is now demonstrating that, you know, it's a risk which is there, and it needs to be managed from all sides. And I think this is really why we say this is like, it's not the normal. This is an exception. It is definitely somewhere in the extreme events what happened. I would say. I would not assume that this happens every 5 years.
I think the Gallagher Re CEO said interestingly he thought it was a 1 in 35 year event.
I don't know by heart, but but I think it's not a 1 in 1,000. I would assume, but you also have to see is when you look at wildfire risk, the way we look at it is if you have like a static risk in mind. And I think when you do statistics, you look, let's say you look back 100 years, and then you look at what is the activity level, frequency, severity. We should not underestimate when you have the US drought index, and when you look at when you are in a dry situation, probability is totally shifted. So when you have a situation like we had last couple of years, I would say even if the model tells you this is an average probability for a certain loss level, I think in the last couple of years this was probably much more likely to happen. So it's also something which is, we say it's a probability which is seasonal, which is changing over time, and that is why I think it's always hard to put it into, is it a 1 in 30, is it a 1 in 50, or 1 in 100. It is, we have a conditional probability which is probably quite high when you're in such a dry environment.
Perfect.
And then of course, teenagers with fireworks, so anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Steve, back to you. Thank you.